pilots nodding off at the yoke. Is this just an airline problem? I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome into the Aero News special feature. Thanks for downloading us today. My guest today is Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves, the journal for the proficient pilot. And we're here to do our Monday safety chat. Bob, thanks for joining us today.
Well, thanks, Bob. A pleasure to be here.
There's still reverberations being felt from that case of a Northwest Airlines crew that was coming in from San Diego to Minneapolis-St. Paul. And we'll never know exactly what happened or at least have any way to corroborate it because the cockpit voice recorder only does 30 minutes and all it picked up was starting from when the plane was already on approach. But they say that they overflew Minneapolis by 150 miles because they were engaged in a heated discussion of company policy and scheduling and using laptop computers on the flight deck and thereby were distracted from radio communications basically for over an hour despite efforts by air traffic controllers and their own company dispatchers with text to reach them. It's your contention that this is not just a problem for guys flying automated heavies.
No, Paul, it isn't. And I don't think it's up to me, certainly, to second guess what really happened up there in that cockpit, whether they were in fact distracted or in a heated debate or, as some have suggested, perhaps asleep. Regardless, we have three responsibilities that every primary pilot is taught on day one, and they come down to three simple words: aviate, navigate, and communicate. The first two of these, aviate, navigate, were clearly not attended to by the crew of this Airbus 320. And that resulted in the overflight. The problem that we see here, and you touched upon it, is the automation that now exists in today's aircraft. Used to be found primarily in airline type air transport aircraft, and now we see it in the general aviation airplanes. The G1000 equipped 172, Cessna 172 with an autopilot, that airplane will literally take off, level off, reach top of descent and descend down to short final with no further action by the pilot after the point that he programs the system. That's great. That's a useful work-saving device. But if we're not careful, we can become so lethargic and so dependent on the automation that we quit paying attention. And when we quit paying attention for whatever reason is generally when we get hurt.
One of the big things that they say will prevent us from ever having passenger flights on UAVs is the fact that people want that human up there just in case something goes wrong. And I think, unfortunately, we're seeing a case where if this had been a UAV, it would have landed on time and followed the route properly.
Well, it very well could have. And I'm sure there's going to be some technological improvements on the Airbus 320. In fact, all airplanes, all transport quality class aircraft, the top of descent, TOD, for example, appears on the moving map. It tells the crew that we're at a point where we're going to have to begin descending in order to reach our destination with a reasonable descent rate. But it doesn't audibilize. There is no sound in the cockpit enunciating that event. We just look at it on the moving map. I suspect that we're going to now hear bells and whistles at the point where we reach the top of descent. Unless the pilot or crew takes specific action, they're going to be startled with an annunciator. This all gets into the ergonomics of the cockpit. And pilots have complained. The folks that have come from the old piston aircraft into the automated jets, they're saying that, the company is taking the pilot out of the scheme, and ultimately we are going to go to unmanned aerial vehicles. We can't do that. We do need that human factor in there. But we humans, we're easily distracted. We're easily bored. And when fatigued, we easily fall asleep. So there needs to be some combination of increased attentiveness on the part of the human crew. And there needs to be some technology that will remind us when we're not doing that which we should be doing.
Bob, how much of this is based in the technology and the automation, and how much of it is just based in the rote repetition? You've mentioned before that there have been times when you felt you were getting too complacent and too kind of taking it for granted in terms of instrument flight, and you got some valuable advice to not fly for a couple of weeks and let some rust accrue.
Yeah, I mean, once you lose the edge, and once we lose the edge and we feel overconfident is when we're going to get into problems. But there is technology. We've greatly reduced the fuel exhaustion accidents because we have more automation in the cockpit to tell us when we have a low fuel situation. It's almost impossible, for example, to be caught unawares of a low fuel situation in a G1000 equipped glass cockpit airplane. I mean, it starts enunciating with flashing lights, and then we hear a human tone coming out of the panel telling us low fuel, low fuel. This kind of thing needs to be built into the cockpit of today's aircraft. We're getting, particularly with the very light jets coming along and the fast glass pistons, we're traveling farther distances. We're up longer. We're operating at higher altitudes. The air is thinner. Oftentimes without supplemental oxygen, the brain's not functioning as it would at sea level. These are human factors that need to be addressed in cockpit designs. But short of that, we have to be painfully aware of what we're doing as aviators ourselves. I mean, here a couple of airline guys lost their tickets. They were emergency revocation of their tickets. That cost them a great deal, and I suspect everybody else that's flying Part 121 is paying particularly close attention to the fact that they've got to start down when it's time to start down. These are accidents that or incidences that the public now has reacted by saying zero tolerance for error. We will not tolerate. If you're going to hold yourself out as a public conveyance, you best not be making any mistakes. But if you do make a mistake, it's going to cost you. It's going to cost you your career.
Well, and Ray LaHood, our transportation secretary, has now thrown this whole category of problems into the same pot with, train operators text messaging and having collisions and people having cell phones distracting behind the wheel. When we come back from the break, Bob, I want to talk about another aspect of this problem that I know is on your mind. My guest is Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves, back with more in a moment. I'm Paul Plack, and you're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
Diamond Aircraft's new DA-40 Diamond Star XL includes all popular Diamond options, combined with the sensational new Garmin GFC-700 Autopilot, a higher performance power plant, and increased gross weight. This makes the Diamond Star XL the perfect choice for affordable personal flying. The Diamond Star XL features equipment and enhancements that increase performance, capability, safety, convenience, and comfort. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3020.
Welcome back to the Aero News special feature. Paul Plack here talking with Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves about distracted pilots in cockpits and what can go wrong. Bob, we were talking about the Northwest incident. It's pretty clear now what has come out of the earlier incident involving the Hawaiian Airlines flight. This was a short inter-island hop made at 9-something in the morning, and yet both pilots fell asleep and overflew their destination. I read comments, anonymous comments from pilots on blogs, on a couple different blogs, that said, this is not uncommon, that this happens all the time where the person in the left seat will say to the person in the right seat, you have the aircraft, and conduct what is jokingly referred to as an intense inspection of the overhead panel. You know, you always run the risk that without that redundancy, the other person may also nod off. We've also seen it result in suggestions that maybe we need rulemaking to keep people with sleep apnea from getting their medicals renewed. How far do we take this, and what are the real problems here?
There is a real problem here. You know, compare flying an airplane to driving a truck down the interstate or a car. Driving a car or a truck down an interstate is a very, very active process. And yet we have truckers and drivers falling asleep. When I say an active process, I mean you're on the wheel, on the gas pedal every second of that trip. In an airplane, this is not true. I mean, I know in my own Cessna 210, I remember a couple of notable trips flying early morning flights to the east, where I would take off, for example, out of Minneapolis and be flying eastward over Lake Michigan at 19,000 feet. The sun is just now coming up over the eastern horizon. I'm still a little sleepy from, a late night the night before. The warm sun is beating now into the cockpit. In my airplane, I have some soft music playing through my headset, the Bose headset. It's just like being in a concert hall. Life is good. And like you say, you just, even by myself, there have been moments where I have just, you know, closed my eyes for a second and then startling, finding myself having nodded off while on the autopilot. And I'm admitting this in a very public forum right here. It does happen. It happens far more often than we might think. And particularly with a two-pilot crew, where just as you've described, Paul, you have one deciding to sleep and the other one to stay awake. Flying on autopilot in cruise flight is such a passive endeavor. I mean, there's nothing required, particularly in a more modern aircraft or even navigation. It's just doing it, and you're sitting there. What do you do? What do you do when you're up there for 3, 4, 5 hours? In an airliner, you can get up, walk back, you know, get a drink of water, hit the lav. In a Mooney or in a Cessna or in any of the smaller airplanes, you can't get up and walk around. You're just kind of there. And physiologically speaking, it can be a real challenge to stay awake. Fortunately, the number of fatal accidents that result from this behavior, I think, are relatively few, because by the time things get really out of sort, then we're startled and we're awakened. I'm not sure I can track any fatal accident to the fact that the guy fell asleep. Perhaps there are out there. I haven't run across them.
I noticed that one high-end luxury automobile brand is now touting the fact that they have sensor technology that can scan a driver's face with infrared sensors and detect when you're nodding off. I wonder, it's amazing that has come to automobiles before aircraft.
Yeah. And indeed, I think it will come to aircraft. We do need it because, again, we have this zero tolerance. Anything that flies, you know, the Balloon Boy incident, the Northwest Airlines, Delta Airlines, the same week that Northwest overflew Minneapolis, Delta Airlines in Atlanta landed on a taxiway. This represents an absolute outrage to the traveling public. I think prior to 9/11, these things still happened, but they just didn't—they weren't brought to the media's attention. And once the media has it, I mean, the whole world knows about it. So, anything that we do in an airplane today is going to capture a lot of attention, particularly if there's an incident associated with it.
Well, Bob, as always, we appreciate your insights. We look forward to Over the Airwaves. We'll talk to you again next Monday.
Thanks, Paul.
Find the latest issue of Bob Miller's monthly newsletter at www.overtheairwaves.com. While you're there, you can subscribe free to get notice by email when the new issues come out. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.